you became a spy again. Did I say that? But you married and had kids. I did that. An unusual thing for a lad who thought he'd be a priest to do. Odd for a spy, too. I wouldn't say that, precisely. Are you Catholic now? Are the Catholics Catholic now, I'd want to know. My kids enjoy something or other, but what it is, I don't know. They disappear on the Sundays with their guitars and violins and bang around in some church, shaking hands and kissing each other. They tell me it's very exhilarating. Your wife is Irish, American, what? She's from Palestine, a Jewish girl. I had a job of work to do out there in that area at one time. Would you believe we had to go to Fada to be married when she was pregnant? Neutral territory. Flynn, you're being a Boston policeman as a cover. It's your cover. Why don't you pour yourself some fresh whiskey, lad? That's why you said you had no experience as a policeman. You've never actually been a policeman. I have to bumble along, said Flynn. Bumble along. You became a Boston policeman just at the time the intelligence agencies were being investigated by Congress and everyone else throughout the world. Have I said too much? Flynn's face was a study in innocence. It must be the tea-talking. Can you still speak German? In a way, it's my natural tongue. As a member of the Hitler Youth, did you ever actually have to pick up a gun and use it? I did, yes. What happened? In my confusion, I almost shot myself. I couldn't shoot at the Allied troops advancing on Munich. I couldn't shoot the lads I'd been brought up with. What did you do? I cried. I lay down in a ditch of mud and I cried. I wasn't 15 yet, lad. I doubt I'd do anything different today. A heavy gust blew a sheet of rain against the windows. Now it's your turn, Fletch. Chapter 24. Fletch mixed himself a second drink. He said, I doubt I have anything to say. Even through the thick walls of the building, they could hear the wind. Oh, I've done this much on you, said Flynn from his chair. Born and raised in Seattle. You have bachelor's and master's degrees from Northwestern. You didn't complete your PhD. The money ran out. Fletch sat down again in his chair. You concentrated on journalism and fine arts. You wrote on the arts for a newspaper in Seattle. Broke a story there regarding the illicit importing of pre-Columbian Canadian objects. You joined the Marine Corps, were sent to the Far East, and won the Bronze Star, which you've never accepted. You then worked as an investigative reporter for the Chicago Post. You broke several big stories there, as you did later for a newspaper in California. As an investigative reporter, not as a critic. There's a difference? About 18 months ago, you disappeared from Southern California. It's hard to get full cooperation from a newspaper these days, said Fletch. One doesn't get to be a newspaper executive without political savvy, which is utterly destructive to the newspaper. You've been married and divorced twice, and there has been a continuous flap in the courts about your refusal to pay alimony. Charges against you, from fraud to contempt, all, I suspect, incurred in your line of duty, were all dropped. Incidentally, after inquiring about you through several California police agencies, I received a personal phone call from the district attorney, or assistant district attorney, somewhere out there, a Mr. Chambers, I think he said his name was, giving you high marks for past cooperation in one or two criminal cases. Austin Chambers, we were in the Marines together. Where have you been in the last 18 months? Traveling. I was in Brazil for a while, the British West Indies, London. I've been living in Italy. You returned to this country once, to Seattle, for your father's funeral. Did you say you inherited your money from him? No, I didn't say that. He was a compulsive gambler, Flynn said. Fletch said, I know. You didn't answer the question as to where your money came from. An old uncle, Fletch lied, died while I was in California. I see. Flynn accepted the lie as a lie. He couldn't leave his money to my father, could he? So there are a good many people in your past who'd like to do you harm, Flynn said. That's the trouble with crime in a mobile society. People wander all over the face of the earth, dragging their pasts with them. A good investigation these days is almost completely beyond a local police department, no matter how good. Your tea must be getting cold, Fletch said. Just as good cold as hot. Flynn poured himself some more. We Europeans aren't as sensitive to temperature as you Americans are. Fletch said, You're thinking my past may have caught up with me in some way. Someone has followed me here and purposely put me in this pickle. Well, I'd hate to have to fill up the other side of the page that contains the list of your enemies. Isn't it said that a good journalist has no friends? I think you're wrong, Inspector. As Peter Fletcher, I was the victim of an accidental frame-up. Someone committed murder in this apartment and arranged things to hang the blame on the next person coming through the front door. Take this Rom situation, for example, said Flynn. Can you explain it to me? What do you mean? Well, now, I not only observe what a man does do, but what he doesn't do, if you take my meaning. You told me the other night that you're here to do research on the life of the painter Edgar Arthur Tharp Jr., the Pinto painter, for a biography. That's right. Yet since Wednesday morning, mind you, until last night, you'd not been in touch with either the Tharp Family Foundation or the proper curator at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. Fletch said, I've been busy. In fact, you haven't been. Our boyo's watching you say you lead the life of a proper Boston old lady. Lunch at Lock Ober's, then drinks at the Ritz. You spent a couple of hours in the offices of the Boston Star. Otherwise, you've been at home here in someone else's apartment. I guess that's true, too. Do you sleep a lot, Mr. Fletcher? I've been putting together my notes. Surely you would have done that in the sunny climate of Italy before you came here. Well, I didn't. Except for Wednesday, of course. We don't know what you did on Wednesday. That was the day you slipped in one door and out the other at the Ritz-Carlton. Innocent as a honeybee, of course. That was before we knew we were into a retired investigative reporter who has an innocent instinct for losing his tail. All we know is that you did not go to either the museum or the Tharp Foundation Wednesday. You've got to understand, Inspector. I'd been traveling, jet lag, the shock of the murder, realizing I was a suspect. I guess I just can't account for it myself. Indeed. Before the curtains and the leaden sky, the green eyes could have been cosmic lights. You're engaged to be married to Angela de Grassi. You're good at names. I've lived in many places. Now, who is she? She's a girl, an Italian girl, daughter of Count de Grassi. Count de Grassi? Count Clemente Arbogastes de Grassi. Is that the gentleman who died last week? We think so. We think so? What sort of an answer is that? He's dead. You said you attended a sort of funeral. Did I? You did? I guess I did. Fletch, why don't you tell me the truth straight out instead of making me work like a dentist pulling teeth? It's my day off, you know. And you paid for the whiskey yourself? I did. And you might start by telling me why you're really here in Boston. Okay. I'm here looking for some paintings. Ah, that's the boy. Flynn finally gets to hear this story. Don't stint yourself now. Be as expansive as you like. Andy de Grassi and I are engaged to be married. A blissful state. Does the young lady speak English? Perfectly. She went to school in Switzerland and for a while here in this country. Very important to have a common language between a husband and wife when it comes to arguing. A collection of paintings was stolen from her father's house outside Livorno a couple of years ago. Very valuable paintings. How many? 19 objects, including one Degas horse. A Degas horse, you say? Bless my nose. And what would you say these 19 objects are worth, taken all in all? Hard to say. Possibly 10 million, 12 million. Dollars? Yes. By God, I shouldn't have taken up the viola. Is it a rich family, the Degrassis? No. Of course you'd say that, being rich yourself. Andy was up in the villa with me at Cagna. Enjoying premarital bliss. You love a story, don't you, Flynn? Show me an Irishman who doesn't. Your years in the Hitler Youth did you no harm that way. Make me hungrier for a good story. I get catalogs from around the world, Fletch said. You know what catalogs are in the art world? They're published by museums of their collections, or of special shows. Dealers put them out as a means of offering what they had to sell, or frequently, as it works out, what they have sold. I see. I think I knew that. One day, Andy is going through a particular catalog issued by a gallery here in Boston, the Horan Gallery. I've never heard of it. It's on Newbury Street. It would be. She recognizes one of the de Grassi paintings, a Bellini, sold. This is 2 years after the robbery. About that. She shows me, and together we go through earlier Horan catalogs. 2 issues back, there's another de Grassi painting, a Perugino, also sold. And this is the first you've heard of the painting since the robbery. Yes. They show up for sale in Boston. It might be more accurate to say they show up sold through Boston. I've got you. Andy's very excited. We pack our bags, jump into the car, and head for Livorno. Where the Count is. Is there a Countess? I'm afraid so, but she's not Andy's mother. You're not too keen on her. Oh, she's all right, I suppose. Andy's not too high on her. Understandable. We were going to show the Count the two catalogues from the Haran Gallery. You didn't call ahead. We were too excited, I guess. We came off the beach, changed, packed, jumped into the car. I don't think we even showered. Must have been an itchy ride. It was. You said you were going to show the catalogues to the Count. On the way down to Livorno, we hear on the car radio that Count Clemente Arbogastes de Grassi has been kidnapped. Kidnapped? My God, that's gotten to be altogether too popular a crime. Andy starts screaming. I drive even faster. We stop for cognac. I go like hell again. She stops to phone ahead. It was quite a ride. You got there. Usual kidnap story, except that the ransom demand was for something over $4 million. Good heavens. And the de Grassis are broke. After the paintings were gone, they had nothing. They'd not been insured. The de Grassi Palazzo outside Livorno is just a weedy, run-down old place. No land. Two old servants who are virtually retired. You said she had an apartment in Rome. How did they live? The three of them, the Count, the Countess, and Andy, had been living off an annuity which comes to about $50,000 a year. Not precisely broke. Not up to paying a $4 million ransom. And you couldn't pay it yourself, I mean from what your uncle left you. No way. I mean this being your prospective father-in-law and all. Absolutely not, I couldn't do it. The de Grassi family has been inactive for decades now, they had no credit. So? So we published statements saying such a ransom was impossible. We received more messages saying essentially, pay up in full or we murder him. I talked the ladies into publishing an audited account of the family's worth. The annuity, incidentally, is absolutely frozen. There was no way even that capital could be turned to cash. In Italian law, you see, the family is still more important than any individual in the family, including the head of the family. The Italians are famous for sticking together, said Flynn, even at the sacrifice of one of them. Just more messages. Pay up or we murder. In 5 days, a week went by, silence. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, we heard nothing more. So he was murdered. So the Italian police believe. How long ago was this? More than a month now. The authorities advised the de Grassis to put the matter out of their minds, to accept the fact that the Count was dead. He could be buried anywhere in Italy, or off its shores, was their exact phrase. We had a memorial service for him last Monday. The Sarta funeral. The sort of funeral. It seemed real enough. So you, an ex-investigative reporter of some repute, decide to take matters into your own hands and come here to Boston to see what you can find out. That's about it. Have you talked with this man Haran? Yes, Wednesday. That's where you were Wednesday. Yes. Then, of course, you want in one door of the Ritz-Carlton and out the Newbury Street door. The gallery is on Newbury Street. Yes. By God, the man is relentlessly innocent. And does the man Haran have the rest of the paintings? A dealer doesn't have paintings, Frank. He deals in them. The trick was to find out the source of the two de Grassi paintings he had already sold. His reputation checks out as clean as a whistle. I suppose you went about it in your usual direct manner. Difficult being direct with an art dealer, Frank. I asked him to find another painting for me, another painting on the de Grassi list, a Picasso named Vino Viola Mademoiselle. Did he turn it up? After a few days, yesterday, he told me it belongs to a man in Dallas, Texas. He also says he bought a couple of other paintings from the same man within the last year or two. I mean, he has sold them for him through his gallery. You have the Texan's name?
I have.
And tell me, Fletch, to whom do these paintings belong, if you do find them?
That's the question. Menti's estate can't be settled for years.
Menti?
The Count's. The will can't be read until the body is found, or enough years to pass for him to be declared dead.
So after you find the paintings, you have to find the body.
No way I can do that, if the Italian police can't.
No one knows whether the paintings belong to the daughter or the widow?
No. What makes it worse is that until Menti's body is found, they don't even have an income.
I dare say both ladies have eyes only for you at the moment.
One would think so.
Ach. And I thought your biggest problem at the moment was being a murder suspect.
I suppose that's why I reacted so slowly at first to the idea I was a murder suspect. I knew you had a more than natural view of the murder, what with your calling the police business phone and all. If you'd told me you once had been a reporter, I would have understood your professional reaction to a body in the living room a little better. Flynn shook the pot and poured himself a third cup of tea. It's not every man who bounces blissfully from a kidnapping to a murder to another murder. Inured, I think, is the word. A good one, that. Do I understand, Inspector Francis Xavier Flynn, that you think there might be some connection between what went on in Italy, I mean Menti's kidnapping and murder, and the murder of Ruth Fryer here? I might. You had me check the airline's passenger list. There might be a connection, Erwin Maurice Fletcher, but at the moment I don't know what it is. There is a connection, said Fletch. Someone did come from Rome with me. And who might that be? The Countess. She flew through New York. She arrived in Boston Tuesday about an hour after I did. And did she know you were coming to this apartment? She had my address and telephone number. She's hot after the paintings, is she? Boiling after them. And how did she know you were looking for them? I guess she read some notes I left Andy. My itinerary, that sort of thing. She knew I had a list of the paintings with me. But why would she kill Ruth Fryer? Ruth may have been here in the apartment naked, waiting to surprise Bart, not knowing he was in Italy. She opened the door to the Countess. The irate stepmother-in-law. Well, damned angry and suspicious. Naturally, she thinks you're grabbing the paintings for Andy. Naturally. Are you? Naturally. It's no good, said Flynn. The bodice was torn. That could have happened any number of different ways. She could have done it herself, taking it off. Ruth Fryer didn't have a key to the apartment. But Joan Winslow does. The woman next door. She has a key? We forgot to ask that. Terrible thing being an inspector of police, inexperienced at the job. I should have asked. But why would she let Ruth Fryer in? She probably wouldn't, if Joan were sober. She let me in. Did she indeed? How very interesting. And where is the Countess now? She moved in last night. Moved in here? Yes, the Ritz-Carlton was too expensive. Ah, the Countess is the dish you had drinks with at the Ritz the other night. Ah, yes, the boyos were rather taken with her. And they said you didn't even pay the check?
I didn't.
The Countess is rather cramping your style.
She'd like to.
Well, well, now. Flynn gazed at the bottom of his empty teacup. Haven't we learned a lot about each other?
Fletch said nothing. His second drink was gone.
Flynn said, I guess I should be shoving home to my family.
The rain was still audible. In the hall, Fletch asked, How's the chubby city council person's murder coming?
It's not coming at all. Not at all. You'd think with such a murder someone would step forward and take the credit, wouldn't you?
Thanks for the scotch, Inspector. Fletch pushed the elevator button. Then he said, Get me off the hook soon, will you, Frank?
I know. You want to go to Texas, trailing your entourage of women.
He went through the clunky elevator doors. Descending the shaft, he said, his voice as quiet as always.
You're the best suspect I've got yet, Fletcher, no matter how you dance on the head of a pin. You might save me the bother by confessing.
Chapter 25. It was just past 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and Fletch was sleepy. The drinks with Flynn had unwound him. He said good night to Mrs. Sawyer, had a bowl of her stew, and despite the hour, crawled into bed. It was midnight, Rome time.
Flesh, darling.
Someone was nibbling his ear. A long, cool body pressed against his. A nipple grazed his forearm. It was a fuller body than Angela's. Much. A leg stroked the back of his own legs. Up and down.
Sylvia!
Even in the dark room, there was no mistaking the tousled hair of his stepmother-in-law to be against the pillow.
Jesus Christ, Sylvia!
It's too late, darling.
She slipped her right hip under his.
You read in the Bible, they knew each other in his sleep.
This is incest!
So was that, darling.
She was fully under him, her hips moving. Her breasts were back-breaking.
God!
It was too late. There was only one thing he could do to prevent either one part of his body or another from breaking.
It was not incest, darling.
Flat on his back, finally, Fletch read the luminous dial of his wristwatch. It was only 8 o'clock at night.
Did you have something to eat?
He asked.
Of course, she said. Do you expect me to put up with your tricks forever?
You've got some pretty good tricks of your own, Countess Del Gassi.
Where did you go last night? 1 hour, 2 hours I wait for my dinner.
I went out.
I know that, son of a bitch.
She sat up.
That's what you do. You tell me some crazy story and then you leave me with nothing. You're no grand chef. You're a son of a bitch. You do the same thing with the paintings. Tell me lies, lies. Leave me with nothing.
He put his hand on her back. I left the front door unlocked for you. Did you get a nice man to let you in downstairs?
I had to wait and wait. You didn't answer the buzzer.
I was asleep. Sitting up in the bed in the dark, the Countess de Grassi began to cry.
Oh, Flesh, you will help me.
I will?
You have to help me.
I do?
Minty's dead. I'm an early widow with nothing, nothing.
Yeah.
I have nothing, Flesh.
Actually, you have a few things going for you.
Angela's young and she's pretty, clever. She has her whole life ahead of her. Me, I have nothing.
She's a de Grassi, Sylvia.
Me? I'm the Countess de Grassi.
I've heard.
I married Minty.
And his paintings?
They are my paintings. Minty would want me to have them. I know this. Many times he spoke of our paintings.
Sylvia, will you listen? Whose paintings they are is not for me to say. Either Minty mentioned them in his will or he didn't. If he did mention them, they go to you, Andy, both of you, neither of you, whatever he directed in his will. If he didn't mention them, then it is for the Italian courts to decide, if we ever recover the paintings, that is.
She crawled inside his arm, snuggled next to him.
Fletch remembered seeing on the beach at Cagna her toes with the nails polished.
She said, if the paintings are in this country, then, how'd you say, possession is the first law of nature.
Self-preservation is the first law of nature, Sylvia, an instinct you have fully developed.
I mean possession.
I know what you mean.
Flesh, tell me the truth. You know where the paintings are.
Sylvia, I am in Boston working on a biography of Edgar Arthur Tharp, Jr. She slapped him lightly on the chest.
You lie. All the time you lie to me.
I am.
You're writing on such a big book. Then where the typewriter? Where the papers? I looked all over the apartment last night. Nobody's writing a book here.
I haven't started yet. I've had distractions.
Distractions. To find the paintings.
He could feel breath from each nostril going against his side.
Where are the paintings?
He was awake, and he was beginning to want it. He said nothing. She placed the side of her knee over his crotch and moved it. She said,
where are the paintings, eh, Flesh?
You're a hell of a negotiator, Sylvia.
You will help me, Flesh, won't you?
You help me first.
America!
Fletch shouted. It was at the worst possible moment that the telephone rang. It was a cable from Andy, Angela de Grassi. Arriving Boston Sunday 6:30 p.m., TWA Flight 540. Is Sylvia with you? Much love, Andy. Fletch said, oh, shit. She never could keep herself to 10 words or less. He said, oh, Christ. He said, what in hell am I doing? Sylvia said, come on, Flesh. He said, all right. It was a somewhat better moment the next time the telephone rang. Fletch said, hello? Are you drunk? It was Jack Saunders. Fletch could hear the city room clatter behind him. No. Were you asleep? No. What are you doing? None of your fucking business. I've got it. Are you about through?
Buzz off, will you, Jack?
Wait a minute, Fletch. I'm stuck.
So am I.
Really stuck. Will you listen a minute?
No.
Fires are breaking out all over Charlestown. A torch is at work. I haven't got the rewrite man I need.
So?
One is drunk and ready for the tank. The other one's pregnant and just left for the hospital to have a baby. Nothing I can do about it. I can't find the day guy. His wife says he's at a ball game somewhere. I'm 3 short on the desk, 2 with vacations and 1 with the flu. The guy I've got on rewrite now is a kid. He's not good enough for a big story like this.
Sounds like a very poor organization, Jack.
Geez, who'd think all hell would break loose on an October Saturday night?
I would.
Can you come in?
For rewrite?
Yeah.
You're crazy.
I can't handle it myself, Fletch. I gotta remake the whole paper.
What time is it?
9:10.
What time do you go to bed?
Well, front page big cuts for the first edition, which goes at 10:20.
Jack, I'm a murder suspect.
Ralph Locke isn't.
I don't know the city.
You know how to put words together.
I'm rusty. Please, Fletch, old time's sake, I can't talk much longer.
Fletch looked through the dark at Sylvia, now on his side of the bed.
I'll be right there, bastard.
Chapter 26.
Frank?
Who do you want?
The young voice was sleepy. It was 2:25 Sunday morning.
Inspector Flynn.
The telephone receiver clattered against wood. At a distance from the phone, the voice said,
Da?
After a long moment, Flynn answered.
Now, who might this be?
I am Fletcher.
God bless my nose. Where are you, lad? Would you be seizing upon this odd hour of the night to confess?
I'm at the Star, Frank.
Now, what would you be doing there? Have you rejoined the enemy?
Charlestown is on fire. Someone is torching it.
I see.
An old friend from the Chicago Post asked me to come in and help out.
You have an old friend in Boston?
I guess so.
Where was he the Tuesday last? Did you ask?
I know he has Monday and Tuesday nights off.
No matter how much you talk to a man, ply him with drink, there's always more to learn. Frank, could I make this call quick?
You didn't have to make it at all. I'm sorry to wake you up.
It's all right, lad. I was just filling in my time by sleeping anyway. I can't get your Boston police spokesman to listen to me.
And who's speaking for us tonight?
A Captain Holman.
Ah, he's a police spokesman, all right. That's precisely what he is.
He calls every 15 minutes with new facts, but I can't get him to listen.
That's what a spokesman is. A person with 2 mouths and 1 ear. A freak of nature.
What would you like to say to him?
I've got some facts, too. We've got more reporters in the field than we have bulls.
We now, is it? An inveterate journalist, I do believe, is Mr. I.M. Fletcher.
Listen, Frank, it's very simple. 11 fires have been set since 7:00. Mostly tenements, a few warehouses, one church. Nothing consistent.
All empty?
Yes.
Then that's consistent.
Right.
At the 3rd, 5th, 7th, 8th, and 9th fires, empty 2-gallon containers of astro gasoline have been found. You know, the kind of containers a gas station sells you when you're out of gas on the road somewhere?
Yes.
I've sent a reporter back to the other fires to see if he can spot astro containers there, too.
Haven't the fire department's arson boys caught on yet?
No, they're doing the usual, watching the spectators. They won't listen to the reporters who keep finding these containers. They're just taking pictures.
I know their method. They'll have a meeting in the morning to compare notes. It gives them something to do with their coffee.
The arsonists should be pinned tonight.
I agree, said Flynn. All that smoke is air polluting.
All these fires are taking place around Farber Hill, all sides of it more or less equally. First a fire starts on the north side, then one on the south side, then one on the northwest side.
That could cause a terrific traffic jam of city equipment, Flynn said. Collisions.
I looked at a district map. In the geographic dead center of the district, at the corner of Breed and Acorn Streets, is a gas station.
And you're going to tell me?
The map doesn't say which company runs the station, so I asked a reporter to drive over and look.
Did he collide with anything?
It's an astro station, Frank.
So whom are we looking for?
A young gas station attendant who works at the astro station at the corner of Breed and Acorn Streets and who got off duty at 6:00.